Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see.
During my years as a firefighter and later as an officer, I would use some of the 40-minute drive time into the firehouse to pray. I would ask God and my guardian angels to watch over my crew and myself, to keep us safe, to help me make sound decisions and know what to do, even to watch over my apparatus and equipment so it worked perfectly and safely. After I'd been recently promoted to lieutenant, a call came in for a smoke condition in a house in my district. We began responding to the location. And on arrival, I had my driver set up the pump while I did my 360 size up. As soon as we had additional personnel on scene, we made entry into the building. As we saw a light to moderate smoke condition on the second floor, we stretched a line up there and felt no heat. Were able to stand up with no problem as we searched for the fire. As I began to update incident command on our progress, suddenly, everything went black. I couldn't see, I couldn't tell where I was. As soon as we had more people in the building doing fire attack and search, I exited. I saw that my mask had a thick layer of black soot and was melted, and my helmet was incinerated. I understood that I had been in a flashover situation and felt absolutely no discomfort, heat, pain, anything, although my gear was toasted. A few days later, the fire investigator sent me some photos of the bedroom, which was directly behind me in the hall. And what I see on the wall appears to be the wings of an angel and a heart. I take this as a sign that my guardian angels were there protecting my crew and myself from what could have been a catastrophic event. To this day, I feel like I've been blessed by that protection my whole life, and I think it's a testament to the power of prayer.
Welcome to Responder Resilience. My name is Dr. Stacy Raymond. First responders and those who serve in the military oftentimes witness extremes of the human condition. From delivering a baby, putting out a raging fire, keeping the peace and saving lives, to dealing with the carnage of car accidents and war, suicides and murders, and the heartbreaking inhumanity of racism, violence, and abuse. Many of our first responders and military see more trauma in one day than the rest of us typically encounter in a lifetime. I thoroughly enjoy my work with these brave and skilled individuals. They undeniably are a rare breed. They are drawn to serve. They must serve. While the average person is running from danger, first responders are moving toward it, toward the fire, the gunshots, the victims, and as a result, their work carves deep grooves into the soul. These remarkable people have an unmistakable depth of character. This depth is best captured by poet Khalil Gibran. In his poem, On Joy and Sorrow, he says, "The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. Is not the cup that holds your wine the very cup that was burned in the potter's oven? And is not the lute that soothes your spirit the very wood that was hollowed with knives?" In my experience as a trauma therapist, I believe there are two sides of the coin when it comes to the chronic impact of being in the trenches and facing trauma. First is the post-traumatic stress that anyone exposed to such trauma can develop immediately or years later, such as difficulty sleeping, nightmares, intrusive sights, sounds, smells, depression, guilt, a hair trigger temper, hypervigilance, relationship problems, and substance abuse. But on the flip side of that harrowing coin lies the quest for meaning and the potential for growth and understanding and joy. A potential for growth and understanding and joy that is equal to the depth of their suffering. Spirituality, the topic of tonight's podcast, is a uniquely personal concept, as different as each and every one of us. A person's spirituality serves as a foundation, a way to cope, a guide for living, and a comfort. For many first responders and members of the military, spirituality can be a lifeline when one feels alone in an unfair world that sometimes makes no sense. In this episode, we will hear what spirituality means to those who risk their lives to protect, and in some cases, to save our lives. We will learn how their beliefs help them through their darkest moments. Let's hear how several first responders and one veteran define their spirituality. First is Dan. Dan is a United States Marine who fought in the Vietnam War.
My grandfather, on my mother's side, was a Mescalero Apache medicine man. And as a little kid, he spent so much time with me because I was the only one that was interested in it. And we'd go out in the woods, we'd just build a fire and stay maybe all night or a couple of days. And he taught me everything. He taught me about how to live, how to trap, how to track animals, how to survive. When I was 6, maybe 7, maybe even younger, and he told me, he said, it's time for you to go to the spirit world. And he took me there. And ever since then, because it was so peaceful and so protective. When I go to the spirit world, I'm in a forest of giant pine trees, pine needles on the ground. They're wet, but soft. And I'm always in my bare feet so that I can feel them. I see the great white stallion, the winged stallion, which the Native Americans think that when you die, the great white stallion comes to take you to the spirit world. Anybody that's not Native American would consider that an angel. And as long as I could look at him, and he looked me in the eyes, and his wings were down, folded down by his side, I knew I was okay. Because he wasn't ready to take me yet.
Next is Sam, a police lieutenant.
We don't like to talk about it a lot, but a lot of cops are very religious. A lot of first responders are very religious because you get to see the best and the worst. And sometimes when you see the best, you're just reminded that there's something out there bigger than you. It's nice to know that you could be a part of it. Find whatever makes you comfortable. Right? You know, if it's sitting out in nature, communing with grass, if it's going to church, if it's going to a pagan ritual, if it's dancing under the moon, do for you what makes you feel better. You don't have to explain it, but it's definitely a major part in helping me cope.
Jimmy is a former deputy fire chief. Currently, he is emergency management director and fire administrator.
I have a unique relationship with God that was really developed since I went into treatment for alcohol and drug addiction, because that was a turning point in my life when my relationship with God had changed. I had grown up in an environment of going to church every day and standing and kneeling and standing and kneeling and sitting and standing. And it was very rote and very calculated. But I walked away kind of still feeling empty. I also grew up with this fear that God was a punitive God, and that was looking down upon me from the heavens above for every little thing that I did wrong, and that I would be held accountable and punished for that. And that was my concept of God. There were several factors that brought me into treatment. And I realized while I was there that the circumstances that led me into treatment wouldn't have happened if it weren't for a loving God. Then somebody had suggested that I read the book called The Shack. So I read the book and it moved me spiritually. And then I went and saw the movie and that also moved me spiritually. And I began to internalize the feelings of love that I believed that my God could be felt internally. And I usually touch my chest near my heart and feel as though that's where my concept of God lies now. So I went from external punitive to external loving to internal loving.
Nick is a retired firefighter. He is currently an EMS operations manager.
Most important thing for me when I think of spirituality, it really is this concept of meaning, and that, you know, the work that we do is incredibly meaningful, and that makes the difficult stuff have a purpose. Because if life is just suffering, that's nihilism and it's pretty miserable. You know, the optimistic side of it is that, you know, from all the horrible things we experience and the difficult things we do, you know, that's where you can find a sense of meaning. And I think it's impossible also to go through life in the Garden of Eden and become a human being and develop in any way. Like, you have to do difficult things. And EMS has been that opportunity for me. You know, people can imagine what makes EMS so difficult, and imagining will get you so far. You got to really kind of experience to get the full effect of, you know, how hard this job actually is. But if you do the job and you're successful in it, it can help you to develop.
Next is Rick, who is both a fire captain and a deacon in his church.
So I'm Captain Rick Lawler of the Ridgefield Fire Department, and we're in St. Mary's Church, one block from my firehouse. I'm a fire captain, but I'm also an ordained clergyman, a deacon in the Diocese of Bridgeport, and I've been serving here for 3 years. So when I'm not working at the firehouse as a captain, you can find me here serving as a deacon. I go on calls and I walk into people's homes, serious calls, sometimes not so serious, and they say, "Oh my God, Deacon Rick is here." And I'm able to help them as a fireman, and I'm also able to help them as a deacon. And when I see them on Sunday in church, we're all smiles as they say to me, "Thank you for coming out, Deacon. It was so good to see you. Thank you for your help." And they'll give me an update on the situation. The word deacon is Greek, comes from the Greek word diakonia, which means service. Deacons spend a little bit of time in the sanctuary where I am right now. But deacons are expected to be in the streets, to meet people out in the streets, in their homes. And deacons need to know the struggles that people are going through. That's what a deacon is about. A deacon is a man of service. And then most recently, I went on a call for a elderly gentleman who had passed away. And his wife was very upset, and she recognized me right away as a deacon. And I was able to talk to her, bring her some comfort, and we went to a room in the house where I was able to pray with her. And she was very grateful for that. Yeah, as a fire captain, we definitely struggle. And there's days when you feel like you're being crowned with thorns and scourged at the pillar, just like Jesus was. While we do have authority, it's much more important for rank to be a servant, to serve your fellow firefighters. Fight for them, protect them, keep them safe. And these are the things that Jesus did. Jesus came here to save his people, to save us. And there are days where in this a great career as a first responder, there's plenty of suffering. If you're doing it right, you're suffering. As a fire captain and as a deacon, I go out onto an emergency call, emergency scene, a situation, and I have my fire truck and medical equipment. I also have holy water. And you'd be surprised at how many times people need to hear a comforting word from a clergyman, or just someone to sit with them and grieve with them, or hold their hand and cry with them. And I've sat with families, loved ones, as they are going through this horrible moment. And I have transitioned in the last couple of years. I'm on a call and I transitioned from fire captain into just a compassionate person to talk to and listen to a family member that's in a state of shock.
Now we will hear what Matt has to say about spirituality. Matt is a retired police officer and also a police chaplain.
But so like my definition of spirituality, if you haven't heard me say it before, spirituality is the living out of your most important values and beliefs. If you're religious, plug them in. But if not, you know, you have other values you're living out. Spirituality is how you relate to your community. Mm-hmm. It's how you relate to humanity. And who more than cops is involved in the nitty-gritty of a community? And who more than cops, in my experience, whether they say they're spiritual or not, understands the highs and lows of the things that human beings going through, because they're immersed mm-hmm. in that stuff
yeah.
all the time.
Right.
Spirituality is how you relate to your higher power or God, if you believe in one. And spirituality is also part of the framework for how you continue to find meaning and purpose through pain, through change, through loss, adversity, and suffering, which is common to everyone. And mm-hmm. cops are immersed in that.
Sid is a deputy fire chief and a retired police officer. Let's hear what he has to say.
I was always a churchgoer, but now I'm really devout. I mean, I give all my strength and thanks to God for everything in my life. So much so that I've taken a step back in terms of my obsession with the firehouse. I'm still involved, but I had a real heart-to-heart with my wife, and we're going to Florida this winter to look for a snowbird house, and something she's always wanted that I was really not interested in. Now I am interested in. I'm not just doing that to placate her. And it's a change that was a long time coming. And I'm just grateful that God's opened my eyes to it. It's just amazing.
Lastly, we will hear from Joe, a fire EMT, as he defines his view of spirituality.
They just talk about how my parents and faith and church family have affected decisions in my life, that I probably wouldn't be down this path of first responder if it weren't for my faith. I've always had that urge to help people or show up and have a smile on your face and be the calm person there trying to manage the scene. You pick it apart, you know, the Bible's got a ton of pages and a lot of authors, so peace that passes all understanding. You'll wipe away every tear. And you'll have no more pain. Talks about the grieving process, you know, pretty much one of the oldest books that's still standing that can kind of guide you in most facets of your life and how to handle situations. I was having a conversation with one of my pastors years ago about this. And he's like, you know what you are? You're an ambassador for Christ disguised as a paramedic. So I've always stuck with that.
Let's go a little deeper now. In my work with first responders and veterans, I noticed that many of them encountered inexplicable events in the line of duty, unusual calls that have no logical explanation. Here's what some of them have to say.
I know we were at Quang Tri, and one of our guys was running back to the foxhole, and the NVA shot an RPG at him, and the RPG was right behind him. And he just kept running and running. And we were hollering to him, get down, get down. And finally jumped in the foxhole and the RPG went right over him. So we actually outrun that rocket. And It was just a miracle, you know, because they shoot down helicopters with them. That's got to be an act of God, you know. Before we ran a patrol, me and my guys sat down and we said a prayer on a 23rd Psalms. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He restoreth my soul. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for thou art with me, and thy rod and thy staff protect me. Another one of those miracles was that Wild Bill Hansen, one of my guys, he always carried a New Testament small in his left breast pocket, always. And we got hit. And when the firefight was over, the next day, he opened it up. And bullets entered the Testament. And it stopped at 23rd Psalms. The bullet was still in there. And he said, look at this. If I hadn't had that in my pocket, of course he would have been dead. And why it didn't penetrate all the way had to be the hand of God.
So miracles do happen, and they happen all the time. Sometimes we see them, sometimes we hear about them, but they do happen. There is a phenomenon that we can't explain, and they're called miracles. It's very good for your faith, but you have to pay attention.
Calls it unexplainable, not by science. It's a 22-year-old kid minding his own business, home from college, walking down the street, and there was a gang initiation. His car stopped, people jumped out, ran up behind him and shot him in the back of the head with a .357. And we get there, you know, there's copious amounts of blood, and he's talking to me. I'm like, how is this a thing? What the bullet did is it entered right like back by his cerebellum, if you will, and it rode his skull under the skin, but never broke the skin, and then ejected out through the top. And I was like, how does that happen, you know? I was working with a great partner who taught me a lot of things in Danbury, and driving down Osborne Street, going to a call, and everything shut off on the ambulance. Radios, we thought it was an electrical problem. Then the ambulance started like talking to us. Yeah, I couldn't tell you what it said, but it was not a radio, wasn't audible, wasn't the happy radio. Just sounded like a voice that was talking to us. It sounded like it was coming from under the seats. My partner Ron and I were just like, holy mackerel. I'm not really sure what's going on right now. So we broke it down after the call. We were like, what's going on here? You know, and you think about it. I mean, there's a potential for thousands of people to die in an ambulance, you know, in the lifespan of an ambulance in a busy city. So there's potential that there are spirits there and whatnot, you know.
I had a spiritual awakening on October 17th, 2021 at 23:46 hours. We had a very serious fire. It was a gasoline tank, truck, tractor trailer. He was hit head on by a car that crossed the double line. The car that hit him head on immediately burst into flames. The driver was incinerated. The tractor of the trailer immediately became fully involved. Fortunately, the truck driver was able to jump out. But I was driving the first new engine, and we got there, and I said, oh boy. And the chief and I, Gene Malone, he and I have over 50 years experience, and I don't know, besides him and I don't know for sure whether the other guys really appreciated how dangerous this was. That event changed my life. In addition to being grateful for us being saved that night from probably certain death if that had exploded. Had a flood of memories of the times that I had been saved from death as a cop and as a firefighter, almost being caught in a flashover, bailing out a window just before a fireball blew out the window behind me. And I said, wow, the things that have opened up since that, since that incident, like this podcast, I never even heard of this podcast before, but you know, they say that there are no coincidences in life. It's only where God seeks to remain anonymous. And this is definitely one of them. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. This is God's hand at work. There's no question in my mind. And I'm not a crackpot or a holy roller or any of those things. It just took a traumatic experience like that for me to realize. As a cop, I almost fell off a one of these rickety old Metro North footbridges on an aided case going to aid a signal tower man that was having a heart attack. It was a brightly lit night, so I didn't have my flashlight turned on. I had oxygen in one hand, flashlight in the other. And God told me, turn that flashlight on. I turned it on. There was a big section of bridge missing. If I hadn't done that, I would have fallen to the tracks below and probably gotten... If the fall didn't kill me, the train probably would have run over me. A family dispute where a guy came at me with a knife. I almost shot him. My partner said the cylinder on the gun started to turn. And for the longest time, I was just grateful I wasn't stabbed. Now, with this new look on life, God also protected me from not having to live with the fact that I took a life. You know, I didn't have to shoot him. He fortunately stopped when he saw the gun. I can't even imagine what that must be like. I know vets that had combat experience are haunted by the killings that they had to do. And he spared me that. And I never even thought about that until recently. And I'm talking about something that happened 30, 35 years ago.
I was in a structure fire one time with a relatively new firefighter. I was his officer. And we were on a second floor in a bedroom, putting water on a fire and doing a good job. And his air alarm went off. And so he followed the hose line out. I moved up to the nozzle. In a split second, I went from being on my hands and knees with a hose line in my arms to the floor collapsing underneath me. The floor had buckled and my legs had straddled the floor beam underneath. So that saved me from falling down to the floor below. You know, God saw to it to put a floor joist in between my legs rather than going through a hole. Another instance, I was a brand new firefighter assigned to a ladder company. We were on a busy street in a three-story brick apartment building. And we were up on a third floor doing a search and rescue for occupants. And in a few minutes, the heavy haze went to blackout conditions. The temperature went from really hot to untenable. And so I was with two other guys. We turned around to exit the back door where we came in. And next thing you know, I couldn't hear them anymore. And I was not in a hallway anymore. I was in a pantry of a kitchen by myself, freaking out, really afraid. I'm like, this is it. You know, I kind of like looked up at the ceiling and said, I guess I'm coming home. Meaning, you know, talking to God. I finally was about to look for a window when I heard this voice, and it didn't come from anybody outside of me. It just said, follow me. And I listened, and I wound up going into the kitchen, away from a window, through the kitchen, into the hallway. And then I heard some voices, and I turned right and followed the voices. Next thing I know, I was on the outside porch with the other two guys that I entered the building with. To me, there's no reason or rationale to explain how I was led in that direction, that I heard the voice and I followed it and listened to it, but it saved my butt.
Most individuals who serve see inordinate amounts of human suffering and carnage. For that reason, their jobs are uniquely challenging. In their own words, this is what they shared.
I was 18 years old when I went to Nam, and I was a country boy, you know. I mean, I'd rode horses, I'd herd cattle, I was just a backwoods country boy. But when I went there, I believed I was doing the right thing. And these people had to be dealt with. The Marine Corps taught us that you pull the trigger before you blink an eye or take a breath. It's just that quick. I thought I was a monster. I thought I was this horrible person because of all the stuff I'd done. But through EMDR, I learned that it wasn't, that's not me. That's not the person I am. I am a good person. Just to go out and shoot somebody or whatever, that's wrong. I think that's what the commandment means. If you kill for protection and food, you do it for pleasure, then that's when it's thou shalt not kill. We did it because we had to. It's either that or you're not going to see the sunrise. It's that simple.
Well, as a first responder and as a fire captain, if you've ever been to a firefighter's funeral, this verse goes right to the heart. Firefighters, the intention is to not die. Through training and good equipment, we have many good outcomes every day. But unfortunately, there are times when firefighters do die in the line of duty. And God has a very special place for them because it's a selfless act. And this journey is about serving others, helping others. Being Christian is about selflessness, not selfishness. It's a world we live in is selfish. We're called to be selfless. And when a firefighter does his job, that's an act of courage. It's an act of faith and trust in God. And unfortunately, sometimes things go wrong and a firefighter pays the ultimate sacrifice. But his reward will be great. That's what that verse means to me.
So that verse, John 15, means a lot. I actually, I think about that one a lot. If you look at some t-shirts of, Marine Corps t-shirts or shirts they sell, or even plaques. I have a plaque right over my shoulder here that says something very similar, actually. It means that you just have love for all people, you know? Don't get me wrong. There's some people, obviously, you butt heads with or you may dislike or something of that nature, but try to treat people with respect, you know? I always tell paramedic students or new students, new hires, that every single call, treat them like it was your mother, you know? And if you do that, you build a good rapport, be able to handle the situation and make things better, ideally. Yeah, but that's a very, very powerful verse as far as laying down one's life for another. I think that's expected of first responders for the most part in military. I think just about every person I know in the business would have no problem doing that, which makes our business very unique. You know, spiritual, unusual things happen in the back of the ambulance a lot for me, actually. There's a lot of times I would pray with patients if they asked. Question you get all the time as a paramedic is like, am I going to die? You know, and of course you want to give them hope and say they won't, but sometimes you know they will, you know. What I find very interesting when someone's circling the drain, you're doing all you can as a paramedic or, you know, whatever your role may be, but people want to believe in something. People are spiritual and people have faith. They may put on a persona they don't, but the majority of people right before they die, they say, Jesus, please save me. God, help me. You know, and I find that very, very interesting. And I prayed with people before. I prayed silently for people, you know.
I was like, you know, what's a a great way to do ministry and learn about psychology and spirituality, mm-hmm. go be a cop. And later in life, if I decide to go into ministry full time and study theology or psychology, I will have all of these real world experiences. So I wanted to experience violence and addictions and mental illness and all the things you'll see as a cop to learn about them, but that's an opportunity to serve. And I also recognize that everybody's going to be having a bad day. Victims and the criminals are not having a good day when the cops show up. Mm-hmm. So I went into police work as a ministry.
A good example is, you know, you see enough people that, for example, suffer the consequences of alcohol abuse in the acute, like a DUI crash, fatal DUI crash, or chronic. You see someone 38 years old dying of liver failure, and you're going to that call every day. You see that and you experience that. You have to then take those lessons and incorporate them into your life, because if you don't, it'll destroy you. I think that's one of the areas that trauma can come from, is if you're not living your life in a way that's in accordance with what your experiences have been. You know, if you see someone tragically lose a loved one at 30 or 40 years old unexpectedly, and you have to be there when the news of their death is delivered, and then you don't incorporate that into the rest of your life, you're going to have a really tough time. So that's the gift of this job, though. You have to go through the difficult stuff, and it's going to be really challenging. But if you do it, the gift that pays back to you is that really constant reminder of, you know, how precious every moment is.
As a first responder, we're trained to react and behave in a way that most people wouldn't. You know, we run into burning buildings when everybody else is running out. We go into harm's way when there's a armed perpetrator as a police officer, when most people would be duck and cover. And so there's a extraordinary amount of traumatic events that first responders are exposed to as a result of their career choice. I experienced 4 different suicide deaths of coworkers in 20 years on the job. That's an average of 1 every 5 years. That's pretty significant. In addition to that, you know, the death of a 4-year-old girl on Christmas Eve in a structure fire was a significant event in my career. The Greenwood nursing home fire, where 16 people died, was a significant event. The death of an elderly man in a high-rise smoking in a overstuffed chair died in my lap in the outside front corridor of the apartment building was a significant event. The death of a firefighter who died in the line of duty as I was the incident commander of the fire. And I bring those up as, you know, significant events that happened in my career as a first responder that, you know, the normal Johnny Q public isn't going to have regular exposure to. So there's an increased exposure to traumatic events that go on in the lives of a first responder. And those things can really be impactful.
We asked them, what gives them hope to get through a particularly difficult call? What compels them to continue at this job that involves responding to child deaths, suicides, gun violence, and victims of car accidents and house fires? Let's hear about what inspires them.
I guess one of the questions you always ask yourself was, is today my last day? Am I going to wake up in the morning? Or am I going to be dead? I would sit in my foxhole and think, today could be it. You know, I don't know. You know, some people say, I got to the point to where I wasn't afraid of dying. That's bullshit. I was afraid to die. But, of course, I didn't want to. But I thought, it's going to happen. Because every day, that's all you saw was death. And I just thought, it's going to happen. And I'd go to the spirit world, and they'd calm me down. And I would see my visions, and I'd say, okay, I'm going to see the sunrise in the morning.
We are spiritual beings as much as we are human beings. There is a spiritual side to every single one of us. And we can look around this beautiful planet, this universe, this galaxy, and we see so much beauty and so much mystery. There is a God, there is a creator, there is a mastermind behind this universe we live in. As a firefighter, captain, EMT, I've had plenty of instances where my faith is tested over the years and my faith is reaffirmed. So let's talk about the first one, where faith gets tested. So when I go on a call and I see a child that is hurt, severely hurt, or even killed, you have to question, does God know what he's doing? It's a very human, natural question to ask. But then there's days when you see your own children. You see the beauty of your family. You see other beautiful things in our society, in our world. The beauty of a sunrise. The beauty of a happy family. Good things that people do for one another. That's an opportunity for your faith to be reaffirmed. And those things happen in the firehouse, they happen around the firehouse, and they happen on calls. You see good. You helped propagate a good outcome. And that is very good for your soul, it's very good for your psyche, and it's very good for your faith.
So what gives me hope every day is, I guess, the fact that you can help people, no matter how small or large their problem may be, in regards to calls. As far as other hope, you know, we only pass through for a brief period here. You know, some days it's like drag at work. David may be able to describe his career, you know. You walk through the door and before you know it, you're retired. So life is kind of the same thing, and I try to, you know, outside of work, I travel like crazy, move around, do stuff every day, knowing that we pass through quick, and what's waiting on the other side is what our objective should be working every day towards, you know. Fall short all the time, don't get me wrong. Screw up every day. But just gives me hope that eternity, I guess you'd say, yeah.
So having a relationship with God, for me, has been able to question some of the results of the incidents that I've been on and try to figure out or have a conversation with God as to why things went the way they did. You know, I'll never understand quite fully why friends of mine, partners in a firehouse, commit suicide. Having a relationship with God gives me a place to go with that uncertainty. You know, I always try to make sense of things that don't make sense, and that's not always possible. So I think having a faith and a belief in God has helped me to accept things that I can't really understand or explain. And so by having a faithful relationship with God as I understand him, and to be able to draw the line between what I can control and what I can't control is important. That's where I ask for wisdom on a regular basis. So I've got surrender, I've got wisdom, I've got acceptance, I've got faith, I've got trust in God. And all of these things, you know, what they do is they take the responsibility for the outcome out of my hands. And when I give those over to God, and I accept whatever's dealt my way, then I'm dealing with what God has planned for my life, even though he doesn't share the plan with me, which I get a little upset about sometimes. It's helpful for me to know that in the past, God has saved me when I couldn't save myself. or has done things for me that I wouldn't have done myself. And that if he's done it then, why wouldn't he do it now?
For our final topic this evening, we asked our first responders, what do they do on a daily basis as part of their spiritual practice?
Today, I talk to the Lord a lot. I pray a lot. Anytime that I'm confused, I'm like, something doesn't seem right, then I actually sit down and talk to the Lord and say, show me some guidance. Show me what I'm supposed to be doing. I know that he doesn't give you everything you want. He gives you everything you need. And because you can ask for $1 million, you ain't gonna get it, you know? But, you know, when I was homeless, he made sure that I had something to eat every day because I needed that.
So when the tones go off and that call is serious, it could be a structure fire or it could be a bad accident where there's a known extrication, your blood definitely gets pumping and you can be overcome with anxiety. It's very normal to get a little nervous. Over the years, as a man of faith, I have developed a routine of prayer, even at work, at the firehouse, as I'm putting my boots on, pulling up my pants to go to a structure fire. I'll say a Hail Mary, and I'll say a little prayer as I get into the truck, that the good Lord will watch over me, watch over the men I work with, the women I work with. We now have women at the firehouse. Watch over us, keep us safe. And that as the incident commander, I make good decisions and that nobody gets hurt.
So like the whole time I was a cop, I didn't own a TV. I had a mattress on the floor, a bookshelf and a desk with candles. And like after my shifts, for example, I had routines. Mm-hmm. Like in Connecticut and in DC, like if there's a church that's open, I would finish my shift. And if I had time before I rolled in to turn in my paper, I stopped to light a candle and pray in silence. And then I would drive home in silence. And then I had like a contemplative prayer, basically like a meditation practice. I would journal things that I was thankful for on that shift, whether it's a conversation with a partner or you met some sweet person in the community, or thank God we got to intercede on this situation and prevent something. So like gratitude journaling, meditating, different types of prayer and meditation. And I had no TV and there was no smartphones back then.
So I don't know if any other first respondent will say this, but I'm going to say it. It's a secret. First responders are very superstitious. I am, at least. I know a lot of people are. I get dressed the same way when I go out on the street. I open my locker the same way. I put my clothes in the locker the same way. I get undressed the same way. And part of that is when I put my vest on, I pray. I say a prayer. It's the Serenity Prayer. And I say it every day. Every day I say it, whether I'm at work or not. Because I think throughout all the trauma I experienced, throughout my worst times, I never felt like I was alone in my spirituality. I wear a St. Michael's medal that was pinned on my vest from my great aunt. When I first got out of the police academy, one of the first things she did was pin it on my lapel in my dress uniform. It's still on my vest today.
My faith helps me cope and carry on as a first responder in a few different ways. Sometimes even while on a call, I'll process some things or ask for a little extra strength on something, you know, whether it was a 6-month-old that was murdered and beat against the wall or, you know, somebody that knew that, you know, put a gun in his mouth or something like that, you know. But sometimes you're at the front door getting ready to crack a nozzle or something, and you're like, Lord, just help me be safe and come out of here, you know. Some tricky situations. In regards to doing some things or rituals, if you will, like I mentioned earlier, I do like a daily devotional. It takes about a minute or two, you know, so I do that first thing in the morning. Try to ponder on that throughout the day. Sometimes, depending on the dispatch of a call, I'll say a quick prayer, you know, help us get through this, you know, bajillion car accident with a bajillion people, you know.
I'm at the point now where if I want to talk to God, I talk directly to God. And that relationship that I have with God has developed over years. And I don't always agree with what goes on in my life and the circumstances that I'm faced with. But I can turn to God at the end of the day or during the middle of the day, it doesn't matter. And just say, I don't understand what's going on or why, but I know that you're in charge and you have a plan and I trust in that. And so while it might be some level of blind faith, it gets me to a place of inner peace that I was never able to experience before because I was always trying to make things go my way. When I'm troubled, whether it be at work or at home, I can stop what I'm doing anytime and have a conversation with God. Just go and find a quiet place and enter into a conversation with God and just kind of surrender, giving that to God to manage and do what he will with it and just give me the wisdom to understand what his results are going to be is helpful for me just dealing on a daily basis with life.
In tonight's podcast, we begin to understand what spirituality can mean to those who serve. Answering the call to protect and save lives exposes first responders and members of the military to the most extreme life and death circumstances. They are forced to think about mortality, to wonder why bad things happen to good people, defenseless innocent children, and the elderly. As daily witnesses of trauma, they must find a way to make peace with their work, or surely the emotional effects will take their toll. Having a spiritual practice can be a helpful and healthy tool in one's emotional toolkit. Tonight's podcast shows us that spirituality comes in many shapes and sizes. It can be as formal as religious prayer or going to church. It can be unconventional, like sitting in silent meditation or walking in nature. Others may ask God directly for protection and guidance. Very different beliefs and practices with a similar, gratifying result. Something we all yearn for, comfort and meaning, a feeling of belonging and purpose in this world, and a way to explain or just accept the unacceptable. I hope you enjoyed tonight's podcast. I want to thank the first responders, especially, who shared from the heart what role spirituality plays in their lives. And for those of you who haven't given your spirituality much thought, may you perhaps come away inspired by what was shared this evening. Thank you.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see.